Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today my guest on the program is Laird Hunt. His new novel is called Never Home. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Laird, how did you get the idea for this story?
You know, it's something that took me a while to come to, but the idea was planted just about 18 years ago when my wife came home from the Strand bookstore in New York, where we were living at the time, with a copy of An Uncommon Soldier, which is a collection of the Civil War letters of a very interesting soldier named Sarah Rosetta Wakeman, which would give one pause right away, because this was indeed a woman who disguised herself as a man and went to fight in the Civil War for the Union Army under the name Lyons Wakeman. And I read it cover to cover. The letters were sort of extraordinary in what they represented, and I knew I wanted to do something with it, but had no idea what that would be, and it took me many a year to come back around to that notion. And I sort of think it was the approach of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. As it was creeping up on us, the idea came back to me, and I started doing some more reading about other women who had done this, and then the book got going.
Apparently, there were hundreds of women who disguised themselves as men and fought in the Civil War. I'm sure they all had different reasons. What were some of the reasons why they would want to do that?
You know, it has seemed to me from reading books like They Fought Like Demons by Deanne Stanton and Lauren Cook, who Lauren Cook also edited the letters of Sarah Wakeman, that these young women, and most of them were quite young, just like the men who fought, went for all the same reasons that the men did. Some went for out of patriotism. Some went because they wanted to have an adventure. Quite a number of them went because going to war meant getting a paycheck, and it represented a whole new set of possibilities in terms of what they could do with their lives. And some certainly did go for romantic reasons, sentimental reasons. There's one in particular, a woman I find quite intriguing. Her name was Malvarina Alvarina Peppercorn, if you can believe it. And she fought for the South. She came out of Tennessee, and she went to war because her twin brother, whose name was Alexander the Great Peppercorn, had enlisted. And she wasn't going to stay home. And in fact, who knows, maybe she was the one who proposed it in the first place. But they went to war together. So all sorts of different reasons. And, you know, I think it's easy to fall into the trap of sort of projecting our ideas, our 21st century ideas, onto these people as far as why they decided to go. But all the indications are they went for just about every reason under the sun.
Laird Hunt joins us. His new novel is Never Home. I approached this book the way I like to approach a lot of fiction. I didn't read any press reviews. I didn't read any blurbs. I just started reading the book because I wanted to be completely uninfluenced and adventurous. And I started reading the book, and I got in a chapter or two or three, and I was really confused because I thought I was reading a story about some guy who came across the border from Indiana to enlist in the Union Army in Southwest Ohio, and he's writing these letters back to this other guy. And I was thinking, are these gay men corresponding? And then I finally figured it out. Wait a minute. This is a woman in disguise. I mean, I was that thrown. Is that surprising?
You know, I absolutely, you know, when you're writing a book, you don't imagine all of the things that go around it, the jacket copy, the press releases, etc., that give a description. You're just in the book, you're in the story, and I absolutely wanted it to be something that creeps up slowly on the narrative. So in other words, it isn't signaled from the first page. Now, once you have registered what's going on, you can look back and see the clues, so to speak, that are there. But I did want it to be something that was a gradual dawning, because for her, that's not the very first thing that she's going to signal when she's telling her story. And I think that that has to do with ultimately what the novel is about, and it's a kind of confession rather than a sort of I had this grand adventure during the Civil War. Let me tell you all about it. There are other things going on. It is a pretty amazing adventure, but that's not really why she's telling the story. So I didn't think that this narrator would say right on the first page, I was a woman who went to war in the disguise of a man.
Well, I feel terrible because that's just such a huge spoiler, but you really can't talk about the story without knowing about the fact that this is a woman disguised as a man, and she calls herself Ash. And we figure out the reason why she came across and pretended she was actually from Ohio was because she was trying to sort of blur who she really was.
Indeed, yes.
So she enlists, and she goes to camp with the other recruits, and they're all getting ready to go fight in the war. And this is a very different world, a very different time, wasn't it?
You know, it really was. And at the same time, while there is this sense of distance and this notion of the expansive past and the past that recedes from us, I also feel as I read the Civil War historian and writer more generally, Tony Horowitz makes a remark along the way to the extent that the Civil War is both distant and still sort of close to us. So on the one hand, the people seem quite different. On the other hand, we can connect with them, I think, in many ways. And that's part of why that period, the mid-19th century, I find so rich and intriguing. Because when I'm reading the letters or diaries or memoirs of people who fought in the Civil War or who lived at that time, I feel like I'm learning about a world that to some extent, maybe even to a large extent, has vanished, but I can also really feel it as well. I can feel a kind of connection, and that's those twin poles of distance and proximity are very intriguing to me and very appealing.
Did you just mention Tony Horowitz?
I did indeed, yeah. Yeah, he's a writer I admire greatly, especially for Confederates in the Attic.
I love that book so much. We had him on for the hardcover and the paperback.
Oh, fantastic.
And we also had him on for his recent book about John Brown. He's quite a researcher, and you really do get that flavor from that book, Confederates in the Attic. That war is still going on in some people's minds.
Oh, you know, it very much is. And I recently took a trip to Gettysburg with my family, including my sister who lives right there in Yellow Springs. And I was, you know, struck again because I had done research in Bull Run and Antietam, but I was just struck again by how vivid and real the Civil War remains for so many people, even up north in Pennsylvania at Gettysburg. We got to see reenactors, and of course I felt very much like I was in one of the essays in Confederates in the Attic by Tony Horowitz, which I really can't recommend enough.
Laird Hunt joins us. His book is Never Home. Okay, Ash has enlisted. Everyone thinks she's a guy, just like the rest of the recruits. And this was a period of time when people wrote letters. There were no emails. There were no cell phones. People a lot of times wrote letters on a daily basis to each other. The mail service was excellent. And she's writing letters to her husband back on the farm, Bartholomew. And these letters are wonderful because we sense her thinking. And one of the things that she's concerned about is that she's such a good shot. She's such a good marksman. There's some concern that perhaps she should miss on purpose occasionally.
Yes, that's the advice that her husband, Bartholomew, gives her. You know, when you're living in disguise, you don't want too many eyes spending time on you, and so the idea there is don't be too exceptional. And I rather imagine that quite a number of the women who did this had similar thoughts in their minds. Don't stand out too much. It doesn't mean that they didn't. A lot of these women do amazing things and do gallant things and do extraordinary things. but I would like to think in their everyday lives in the camp, they were just a little bit more retiring than some of the other some of their fellows. Although Sarah Wakeman, in her letters, brags about being able to whoop any of the boys in her company, so she wasn't afraid to enter into fisticuffs, it sounds like.
And naturally, being in an all-male environment like that, there are some people who are slightly suspicious of her. They're curious. There's some that are picking up something about her that isn't quite right.
Absolutely. It's a gradual process, and which is really borne out by the historical record. Oftentimes, these women would live in disguise alongside men for a year, for 2 years, for longer, and not be discovered until very late in the game, or very late into their term, their time in the army. And I wanted to have that sense of a sort of creeping suspicion, but also the idea that some people really might just be the sort of people who do look more closely, who are a little more attentive. One of the things that is remarked upon in the literature, the people who have taken this up, is that the women in disguise were extra afraid of being looked at by other women. The men they could fool pretty easily. They put the uniform on. They held themselves a certain way. They walked a certain way. They spit tobacco, smoke a pipe, and talk about the things that the other boys talked about, and they would fool them. But to be seen and looked at by a woman was another thing, and women could see through the disguise much more quickly. But it seemed to me that there would probably be some men in that category too, and I didn't want to make anyone too caricatural, and certainly not a whole regiment full of different individuals who think about the world and feel about the world in different ways. And so indeed there are some men who get it and who don't sell her out, who don't expose her.
Well, having already done the biggest spoiler in history by saying that she's a woman, I won't give away any more about the story as far as spoilers go, but suffice it to say that she goes through camp and then she goes into battle. And for anyone that's read Civil War history, the Civil War battles were horrific, and you must have done a lot of research to try to accurately portray what she was facing.
You know, I really did, and I find it endlessly fascinating to read about that period, that war. So much was unprecedented about the scope of the conflict, the kind of conflict, the type of weaponry that was used, the recent introduction of rifled muskets, for example, that allowed the killing to happen at much greater distance. And so this phenomenon, it wasn't the first time this had happened, but it happened on such a great scale that people couldn't see the faces of those who were killing them. Again, on this incredible scale. But, you know, one of the things I really found intriguing about reading, especially focusing my research on the intimate diaries and letters and then memoirs, is that so often the soldiers would certainly make reference to the battles, the conflicts they'd been in, but it was almost like a Shakespearean play in some cases, where it was almost as if that the battle was happening off stage of the letter. It's mentioned, we had a brawl yesterday. And who knows, that might have been Shiloh, that might have been Antietam, that might have been the first or second Bull Run, something really enormous. But it's mentioned kind of in passing, almost with a sort of understated bravado. And so that was useful to me to think about, that one would, you know, this is the structure of Neverhome, is that this is someone who's telling about the war later on. And so there is going to be description of the battle, but I kept in mind that notion of a kind of understatement and a willingness or a desire, I should say, not to talk it up too much, not to brag too much, but to say the minimum. And sometimes saying the minimum really resonates. And certainly that's what I was going for in thinking about these conflicts.
Laird Hunt joins us on the program today. His new novel is never home. And without giving away the details, I'd like to mention that this story does take us right through the village of Yellow Springs, Ohio, during the Civil War. And Antioch College is mentioned, and since this is the Antioch College radio station in Yellow Springs, that's all pretty cool.
I absolutely love Yellow Springs, and it's been one of the great joys of my recent years to visit my sister, Lorna Hunt, who lives in town and works indeed for Antioch. She did so in California. Now she's been in Yellow Springs for a number of years. And I just think it's an amazing town. And the more I read into the history, and certainly the history around the period of the Civil War, I realized that she had to go through Antioch. And so I was able to set a series of very important scenes later in the book there. What a great excuse to spend time walking around the older buildings of the campus and to try and imagine it in those early days. Of course, it was shut down as you know during the Civil War, the campus, as I describe it, is glimpsed through trees and partially seen, but it's there. And then of course that the very rich history of supporting all sorts of people and all sorts of lives that is Yellow Springs was tremendously important to the project as well.
Ash's sojourn in the village of Yellow Springs is all wonderfully mysterious. How she got there, who she meets, what she does while she's here. And I think if I had to pick my favorite character in the whole story, besides Ash, I would pick this woman that she meets, that she stays with in Yellow Springs. What a wonderful character she is.
I'm partial to her, too, so I'm glad to hear you say that. And, you know, that was one of the lovely things about the editing process in this book. There were a couple of characters who, when I first turned the manuscript in, had not been as fully drawn as they deserved to be. And one was a woman she meets earlier in the novel and who plays a role in a serious reversal that Ash undergoes. And then there's the one that you refer to in Yellow Springs. And one of the things that my editor counseled me to do was to turn them into dimensional characters rather than more mechanisms in the text. And so what a joy it was to really explore that time. There was a lot of time spent with other characters in the Yellow Springs moment, but not the one that you're referring to. So I sort of fell in love with her in a way, and I would have liked to spend time in her house myself.
Well, that first woman that she meets, oh, what a delicious betrayal.
Indeed, yes.
Without doing any spoilers, the readers are going to have to discover that for themselves. So, Laird, tell us about yourself. What other stuff have you written? How did you become a writer?
It dawned on me not very long ago that I've been at this for at least a couple of decades, going on maybe a quarter century. I started seriously writing when I was an English teacher abroad in Japan just after I took my undergraduate degree at Indiana University. I went and taught English in Japan, and I brought a short stack of books with me and a primitive word processor and set out to become a writer. And it it took me a very long time. Along the way, I got a graduate degree, a Master of Fine Arts at a very small college called Naropa University, where I studied with Bobby Louise Hawkins, Ann Waldman, even had a class with Allen Ginsberg, and then spent time in Paris and then lived for a number of years in New York, where my first novel was published, and I fell in with many a brilliant young writer, which was very nourishing. And then about a decade or so ago, after I had spent 5 years earning my daily wage at the United Nations, my wife and I both got jobs in Colorado. So we returned to Colorado, and we now teach at the University of Denver. And somehow along the way, I've published, this is my sixth novel, And you know, the previous one is maybe the most recent novel, Before Neverhome, is maybe the most relevant to the conversation because it's set during the 19th century, just before the Civil War, and it's set in Indiana and Kentucky. So I've been exploring over these two books and with another project that I'm working on, various issues to do with 19th century and some of the deeper, darker, perhaps chapters in our history, slavery, and then some of the repercussions of the Civil War. And then I've been investigating, just starting to investigate the period of Reconstruction as well. And I feel like so many of these issues continue to resonate and to be tremendously important. After all, women were only given the so-called right, which truly had been theirs for centuries to serve in active combat in the United States, as you know. And it was a pleasure to be working on this particular story and to hear this in the headlines that there had been this major shift. And then, of course, issues to do with race and the legacies of the horrors of the institution of slavery continue to play out as well. So it feels like fertile territory to me. And so even though I do have a number of books that are contemporary and are in urban settings, there's this other strand, perhaps to do with my years in high school living on a farm in rural Indiana, that I think of as these explorations of history, but also of landscape.
Hmm. After your time at Naropa, it sounds like you've been in the Boulder orbit ever since.
In one way or another, that's right. Yeah, and it's interesting because my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, honeymooned in Estes Park, which is not very far away from here. Mm-hmm. So it's, and my uncle fell in love with Boulder when he was a boy, and so there's all this interest in this area, something about it, which I haven't explored in fiction, but maybe someday I will.
Laird Hunt joins us. His new novel is Never Home. Tell us about the title. What does this mean?
The title, along with the first line, really came within a day or two of each other those few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when I started earnestly writing on this book. And so the first line, I was strong and he was not, so it was me went to war to defend the Republic. And then almost, in my mind, it happened simultaneously. That's not quite right, but Never Home came to me. And it was never two words. It was always that single word that the two pressed together, and maybe thinking of those German compound words where you can just smush things together and create something that's new. I wish we had that in English. We inherited some things from German, the Germanic languages, but not that. To me, it represents this a kind of idea, in a way, more than a place. It's a sort of state of mind, this character who is trying to get home, and I don't want to engage in any spoilers either, so I won't say whether or not that occurs, etc. But this is something that so many of the soldiers so far from home were dealing with, this notion of a kind of never home, and some of them never did get home. Of course, by the hundreds of thousands, they died, they perished, and so they were in this sort of state of mind, a kind of suspension is how it feels to me, and I was just there are also for me within this text deliberately something that grew over the course of writing it, echoes of Homer's story, the Odyssey, and his attempt to get home, which is constantly deferred. He's constantly, he's trapped. He takes a detour. Mm-hmm. He has the spirit of adventure that doesn't allow him yet to go home. While, of course, at the end of the Odyssey, he does get home, everything's changed, and he's much changed. And so I had that in my mind as well, that sort of notion. And what does it mean to come back after a great journey, a great trauma? And what has changed and what has remained the same? And are we ever truly back in that place that we set out from those years before?
Was it a challenge for you to write from the viewpoint of a woman?
It was a very productive challenge. The previous novel I mentioned, Kind One, set during slavery, is also narrated by a woman. And so I had had some experience with doing this, and it was a story that I felt that one had to be narrated by a woman. In this case, there wasn't any question, there wasn't any deliberation before. I said, wow, I'd like to do that again. Let me write another story from a woman's perspective. It really was much more organic than that. This voice came to me, and that first line that I mentioned a moment ago was not said by a man. And so I had this voice in my head. And I have to say that I was, in this context, I was, to a large extent, raised by my paternal grandmother on this farm in rural Indiana for quite a number of years. That was home for me, and it was the two of us most of the time in a large farmhouse. And while the voice of Ash Thompson in Never Home is not my grandmother's voice, I feel like Ash Thompson's voice, or some version of that, was lurking in my grandmother's voice. Oh. After all, when she was a child, there were Civil War veterans all over the place, and she knew them, and she remembered them, and spoke about them. Especially when she would grow agitated, and as a 13-year-old, a teenager, when I first arrived at the farm, I agitated her all too frequently. The echoes of those older voices, those ancestral voices, would come out, and she would drop articles. She would speak with a slightly heavier accent, and so it was relatively easy, I should say, for me to hear that voice in my head when I was drafting, when I was going beyond that first line of Never Home and finding the story. So, you know, my sense of it is that we have not yet told nearly enough stories about girls and women in our literature. And it seems to me that no matter who we are and whether we can or cannot speak with the same authority, it seems to me we all ought to be telling more of them. And so, indeed, I'm continuing to think about female narrators with my next project. And I have two female narrators in that book.
Laird, we really appreciate your time on the program.
It's just been such a pleasure to be with you.
My guest has been Laird Hunt. His new novel is Never Home, for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Since we did our first Book Nook programs in 1994, the program has gone through some changes, and we've got some new ones on the horizon. If you go to the WYSO website at wyso.org, you'll see that the Book Nook is moving on the schedule and also expanding. Check it out. And tune in next week. My guest will be Benjamin Whitmer. His new novel is Cry Father, right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.